Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Usually when we sit down to look at the tech news for you, it feels a bit like, it feels like maintenance work.
Yeah, exactly. Like the sort of slow roll of progress. You barely even notice it happening day to day.
Right. We see a phone that's maybe 5% faster, or a camera with, one extra megapixel, or an app that just changed its logo color. It's safe. It's incremental.
But today isn't, well, today is not that.
No, it is definitely not. The stack of reports you brought to the table today, I mean, the source material literally describes the current landscape as a technological earthquake that smells of burning silicon.
Which is a very vivid image.
It is. But that is not the language of a slow roll.
No, and honestly, looking at the data we have for today, February 26, 2026, it's really not hyperbole. We aren't just seeing new gadgets. We are seeing six major events hitting simultaneously that are effectively rewriting the rules of reality.
It really feels like the tectonic plates are actually moving under our feet right now. So here is the mission for this deep dive. We need to unpack how Google is rendering photographers obsolete, how Samsung is turning the device in your pocket into a cybernetic node, and, well, my personal favorite, how Uber is finally making the sci-fi dream of flying taxis a reality.
Right, and we also can't ignore the gaming wars shifting under our feet with PlayStation and Nintendo, plus a very serious, impartial look at how Huawei is technically defying global sanctions.
It is a totally packed lineup, but the thread tying this all together seems to be urgency. It feels like we've crossed a threshold where tools aren't just passive things we pick up anymore. They seem to be acting on their own.
Yeah, that is the key insight here. The overarching theme is that these tools are becoming part of our neural system. We're seeing an acceleration of AI out of the standard chat box and into physical and creative spaces that we honestly used to think were completely safe from automation.
Well, let's start with the announcement that has the creative world absolutely buzzing right now and maybe sweating a little bit. Google has dropped a bombshell called Nano Banana 2. And look, I have to stop you there. Nano Banana, it sounds like a smoothie ingredient or maybe a cartoon character, not a world-changing AI.
I know. It sounds incredibly playful, and I think that's almost by design to sort of disarm you,
Yeah.
because the tech underneath is terrifyingly competent. This isn't just another image generator where you type cat on a skateboard and get a weird hallucinogenic cartoon. The sources describe this as a cinematic architect.
Okay, so let's look under the hood. The specs mentioned is built on the Gemini 3.0 Pro Brain architecture. What does that actually mean for the output?
Well, it means native 2K generation with 16-bit color rendering, which then upscales to 4K.
I want to pause on the 16-bit color thing. For the non-photographers listening, why does that specific detail matter so much?
Think of it like a box of crayons. Most previous AI worked with a standard box, let's say 64 colors. It looks fine at a glance, but if you look at a sunset, you see banding.
Oh, like those blocky lines where one color shifts clunkily to another.
Exactly. 16-bit is like having millions of crayons. The gradients, the shadows, the skin tones, they become completely fluid. They become indistinguishable from reality. The source material claims the boundary between a cinematic camera and a processor output is now totally obliterated.
But we've seen high-res AI images before. I mean, Midjourney
Yeah.
was doing great stuff back in 2024. Why is this specific release an earthquake?
Because it cracked the holy grail of AI generation, which is character consistency.
Right, because usually if I ask an AI to generate a character, let's say Detective Smith, and then I ask for Detective Smith drinking coffee in a diner, it generates a totally different guy who just happens to be wearing a similar hat.
Exactly. We call that visual noise.
Yeah.
The AI didn't actually know Detective Smith as a person, it just knew the concept of man in hat. It effectively had amnesia between every single image it generated. But Nano Banana 2 understands 3D facial concepts. It maps the bone structure, the hairstyle, the lighting as permanent objects in a virtual 3D space.
So it has object permanence. It actually remembers what his nose looks like from the side versus the front.
Essentially, yes, it can render that exact same character in hundreds of consecutive shots, different angles, crying, laughing in heavy shadow with an error tolerance of under 1%.
That just changes the economics of storytelling entirely. You could technically storyboard and render an entire graphic novel or a film scene without the character morphing into a stranger halfway through.
Precisely. And here's where it gets really interesting for the market. It's not just faces. this thing has finally cracked the code on text rendering.
Oh, I saw this in the notes. It mentions legible Persian, Arabic, and Chinese text.
Yes. Historically, AI treats text like decoration. It looks like alien gibberish or squiggles because the AI is dreaming the shape of letters without actually understanding them. But this engine understands the linguistics. It can render completely legible Persian text on a neon billboard in the rain with perfect reflection.
So let's play this out for you if you're listening. Mm-hmm. If I'm a global brand and I need a marketing campaign in 20 languages.
You don't hire a photographer. You don't hire a location scout. You don't fly a crew to Tokyo or Dubai. You just code it. You type the prompt. The source material explicitly calls this an occupational extinction event for studio photographers and generic graphic designers.
That is incredibly harsh language. Extinction.
It is, but look at the math. If you need marketing assets and you can generate them instantly for pennies, the need for human intervention drops to near zero. Why pay for the flight and the hotel and the camera crew when the code does it better and faster?
Unless you pivot. It sounds like a rebirth for prompt engineers.
That's the flip side. The creativity shifts from holding the physical camera to writing the prompt that directs the AI. The artist becomes the conductor, not the player.
It's a brave new world for creatives, that is for sure.
Yeah.
But let's move from software in the cloud to the hardware in your pocket. Samsung just held their Unpacked event for the Galaxy S26 series. And again, the language here is very specific. They aren't calling it a smartphone anymore.
No, the term being used is cybernetic node. And I think that distinction is really vital to understand.
Cybernetic node sounds like something straight out of Star Trek. It implies it's part of a network rather than just a standalone tool. But isn't that just marketing fluff?
Usually I'd say yes, but this time it comes down to the actual architecture inside, specifically the NPU, the neural processing unit, and the unified memory architecture. Samsung has designed this chip so that it can execute massive large language models, or LLMs, directly on the device.
Let's break that down. Mm-hmm. Usually when I use a chatbot, my phone is essentially just a walkie-talkie. It sends a signal to a massive server farm in California that server thinks.
Yeah.
And then it sends the answer back.
Right. And that introduces latency, a delay, and it sends your personal data out of your hands. The S26 does the thinking locally. It's not a walkie-talkie anymore. It's a brain.
So it has its own reflex system.
Exactly. Zero data sent to the cloud. Single-digit millisecond latency. It is thinking as fast as you are.
That sounds amazing for privacy, actually. If it's 100% local processing, the big tech companies don't know what I'm asking my phone.
Exactly. And it pairs with the Galaxy Buds 4 Pro for real-time translation. Imagine walking through a foreign city and your earbuds are translating everything instantly and your phone is anticipating your next move, all without ever touching the internet. It's a cybernetic assistant that lives in your pocket.
But reading through the analysis here, I sense a massive buttering choice of Gigment. The source material flags this as a potential dark side.
It does. And it raises a massive philosophical question about agency.
Is this the loss of free will argument?
It is. It's about psychological dependency. When you have an AI that knows you so well because it's processing all your biometric and text data locally, and it starts predicting your needs before you even articulate them, are you still making choices?
Give me an example. How does that actually look in real life?
Okay, say it's 6 p.m. Your node knows your blood sugar is low because of your watch sensors. It knows you had a stressful meeting because of your voice stress analysis. And it knows you usually crave comfort food on Tuesdays. It orders a pizza before you even open the app. You just get a notification that says pizza arriving in 20 minutes. You eat the pizza. Did you actually choose dinner?
I mean, I definitely wanted the pizza. But I see your point. The friction of choice was completely removed. I didn't have to think about it at all.
And the source warns that the surrender of friction is inherently a surrender of autonomy. It's framed as user convenience, but it's really the final step before biological connection to digital networks. We are training ourselves to rely on the algorithm for our basic daily decision making.
So we are becoming nodes in the network just as much as the phone is. We supply the biological data and it supplies the direction.
In a way, yes. We are the biological component of that node.
Well, while we are pondering our loss of free will, let's look at something that frees us from traffic. This one actually got me genuinely excited because I feel like we've been promised this since the Jetsons. Uber. Flying taxis. Is it actually happening?
It is officially confirmed. Uber is launching its commercial EVTOL network in 2026. That stands for Electric Vertical Takeoff and Landing.
We have been hearing about this for a decade, though. Every single year, they say next year. What changed technologically to make it viable right now?
The breakthrough is in the batteries, specifically solid-state batteries.
How are those different from the lithium-ion battery in my laptop or my car?
Lithium-ion uses a liquid electrolyte to move energy around. It's heavy, it gets hot, and it's volatile. Solid-state uses a solid material. It's lighter, safer, and critically, it holds much more energy per pound. That high energy density was the missing link. Before this, the batteries were so heavy that you couldn't fly far enough to actually make any money.
And
now they have a range exceeding 100 kilometers.
100 kilometers. That is not just hopping across town. That is a legitimate commute from an entirely different city.
And doing it with zero carbon emissions. And crucially for the business model, it's not flown by a pilot sitting in the front seat. It's guided by autopilot AI with anti-collision radars and 3D traffic management.
So if I can live 100 kilometers away and get to the city center in the Pend, what does the source say for time?
About 10 minutes.
10 minutes. That changes everything about where we choose to live. It collapses the entire concept of distance.
The source analysis points out that this will fundamentally transform real estate. If a remote suburb is 10 minutes away by sky, is it really remote anymore? Property values in those rural areas are going to skyrocket because the commute is suddenly shorter than driving from the immediate suburbs.
But playing devil's advocate here, because I am just imagining thousands of these buzzing over my head. What if it crashes? Or worse, what if it gets hacked?
That is the terrifying prospect the expert in the source material highlights. It's not just about gravity anymore, it's about cybersecurity. If the fleet management code is infiltrated...
You have 2-ton projectiles raining from the sky.
Essentially, yes. The catastrophe would be irreparable.
Yeah.
So the challenge for 2026 isn't the aerodynamics. The aerodynamics are solved. The challenge is the legislation of airspace and securing that code against cyber hacks.
It seems like every leap forward today comes with a terrifying caveat. Let's shift gears to something a little more fun, but surprisingly cutthroat. The console wars.
The gaming landscape is definitely shifting massively. On one side, you have Sony. They are terrified of losing subscribers. So for PlayStation Plus, in March 2026, they are dropping heavy hitters. Monster Hunter Rise, PGA Tour, 2K25, Elder Scrolls Online. They're trying to build a moat around their players to keep them from leaving.
But the real earthquake, according to the report, isn't about Sony at all. It's about Nintendo. And this rumor is fascinating because Nintendo usually ignores high-end graphics. They usually just do their own thing.
It is fascinating. The report cites reputable sources claiming that a tech demo of Gran Turismo 7, which is a Sony exclusive known for absolute photorealism, was running on the Nintendo Switch 2.
Wait, Gran Turismo pushes the PlayStation 5 to its absolute limits. How is it running on a handheld device? That sounds physically impossible.
That is the magic of the new architecture. The Switch 2 is reportedly using the NVIDIA Tegra Laurel architecture. But the key isn't raw horsepower, it's DLSS.
Deep learning supersampling. For the listener, can you explain DLSS like I'm 5?
Sure. Imagine you draw a rough sketch of a car on a napkin. It's jagged, it's low detail. DLSS is like a professional artist standing behind you who instantly looks at your napkin and paints a photorealistic oil painting based on it in real time. The Switch renders the game at a very low resolution, which is easy for a handheld, and the AI upscales it to look perfect on your screen.
So the hardware itself doesn't need to be strong because the AI is doing all the heavy lifting in the background.
Exactly. The takeaway here is that the next-gen war isn't about who has the biggest processor anymore. It's about the efficiency of AI upscaling. If a handheld can use AI to mimic a home console, the line between portable and console completely disappears.
That connects right back to the nano banana point, doesn't it? It's all about the software filling in the reality gaps.
Completely. It's efficiency over brute force. And speaking of efficiency, or maybe economic necessity, we have to talk about Square Enix and Final Fantasy VII.
Yes, Remake Part 3. The report says development is very smooth, which for game development is usually a lie.
Usually, yes. But in this case, the analysis suggests it's true because of stable asset pipelines. They've eliminated memory bottlenecks. But the bigger story isn't the tech, it's the business strategy.
The ends of exclusivity.
The death of the empire of isolated platforms. Square Enix is moving to simultaneous multi-platform releases.
Why now, though? Sony and Square have been partners for decades.
Money. Pure and simple. When a game budget hits $300 million, which these blockbusters absolutely do, you simply cannot afford to limit your audience to just one console. You need the PC market. You need the console market. You need everyone. Exclusivity is a luxury developers can no longer afford.
So the walls are coming down. Sony games on Nintendo hardware, Square Enix everywhere. It's a totally different landscape.
It is. But while those commercial walls come down, other geopolitical walls are going up. Which brings us to Huawei.
Right, the Silicon Resistance. This is the geopolitical segment of our dive. Despite all the U.S. sanctions, Huawei has released the Mate 80 Pro globally. Now, the source material lays this out quite impartially, noting that, regardless of the geopolitics, the tech itself is a direct challenge to Apple and Samsung flagships.
And it's not just a participation trophy. It challenges them directly.
How, though? I thought they were cut off from the advanced chip manufacturing tools. I thought they couldn't get the lithography machines required to make these chips.
They were, but the report details how they're using domestic Chinese chips from SMIC, utilizing something called 3D advanced packaging.
Packaging usually just means the literal box it comes in. I assume that's not what we're talking about here.
No, definitely not. In chip design packaging is how you arrange the transistors and the components on the board itself. Traditional chips are like urban sprawl. They are flat and wide. 3D packaging is like building a skyscraper. You stack the components vertically. It allows for vastly better thermal dissipation cooling, which lets them push the chips much harder without overheating.
So they basically found a workaround. They built up instead of out.
A highly effective one, yes. But the real showstopper isn't even the chip. It's the satellite capability.
We've seen satellite emergency texts before on iPhones. Like, help, I'm stuck on a mountain.
This is completely different. The Mate 80 Pro offers stable voice calls via low Earth orbit satellites.
Wait, so you can have a full phone conversation from the middle of the Pacific Ocean?
Or from a blind spot, literally anywhere on Earth.
Right.
And crucially, it bypasses the terrestrial internet and traditional infrastructure entirely.
That feels incredibly significant. If you aren't using the cell towers,
then you aren't touching the cables and towers controlled by traditional telecom giants or Western governments. It's a direct challenge to Western communication hegemony. It's effectively a declaration of technological independence.
It really feels like we are looking at a splintering of the internet itself.
We are. We have the cybernetic nodes of Samsung processing locally, the AI creativity of Google rewriting reality, and now a completely separate communication infrastructure from Huawei.
So let's try to synthesize all of this. We started by saying this was an earthquake.
And I think the sheer velocity proves that.
We have taxis taking off vertically because of new battery chemistry.
We have consoles using AI to punch way above their weight class.
We have content generation moving from human hands to robotic code, creating perfect images from nothing.
And we have smartphones that are evolving into extensions of our own brains, predicting our hunger before we even feel it.
It's a lot to process. The source material ends with a warning that I think we need to leave you with today. It says those who fail to understand the technology will eventually be violently managed by it.
That is the crux of it. We are at a point where passive consumption just isn't an option anymore. These tools, the AI, the nodes, the algorithms, they are active agents. They are making decisions.
So the provocative thought we have for you listening right now is this. In this new era of 2026, are you the user or are you the used? Are you managing the tech, or is the tech quietly managing you?
It is a question worth asking every single time you pick up that cybernetic node.
Absolutely. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.